What I will do to begin with is just do a little scene setting in terms of the context of the run-up to the announcement of the spending review allocations in December, which followed the earlier spending review process. And, of course, ultimately, decisions in that spending review were taken by ministers, by the Treasury, by the Chancellor of the Exchequer. And so I think it's always good to note that we have support and insight at the highest levels into the fundamental importance of science and research for the UK. The ministerial context in which I work and have this rather absurd, grandiose title of Director General All Knowledge and Innovation has brought together into one unit in that department the higher education scene, working with the English Funding Council, the research councils and national academies, and a number of innovation-related bodies, including TSB, National Physical Laboratory, National Measurement Office. And in terms of the department's mission and aspirations, clearly a lot of this is directed towards producing and sustaining a strong and innovative economy, which is world-class competitive. And there is a realization at the heart of all that is the work in the universities, the linkage of the universities and industry, and finding ways to pull through from our superb research base to support innovation and technology development. In terms of spending on science and research, we obviously have to position ourselves competitively internationally, and there are trends in expenditure, which we all know about, both in the UK over recent years and in the wider field. But in terms of something that perhaps is a more useful measure, which is actually productivity, if we take academic excellence and we take citation as a measure and we take that citation per pound input into the process, then the UK research base becomes top of the league table. Second, perhaps, for excellence on conventional measures, but first if you take into account excellence per pound invested, dollar invested. In terms of the context in arguing for the science and research budget, sustaining funding, one has to be prepared to engage in debates to why one should spend these large amounts of taxpayers' money. Of course, we all appreciate beauty, truth, and goodness and what it does for the human soul to discover knowledge and disseminate it, but we do need a more systematic, harder-nosed way of encapsulating all that. And so within the department, we've developed with colleagues, many of them here, in business, in the wider public sector, in the universities, a pretty extensive evidence base, which draws out the various impacts. We use the word economic impact, but we use the word economic very, very broadly. In terms of business, of course, creating new businesses, improving performances of existing businesses, perhaps above all, human capital of all kinds, delivering highly skilled people to the labour market, but that labour market encapsulating, you know, the cultural industries, the creative industries, public services, NHS, and so on. So a totally extensive and wide-ranging concept of impact, and also, very importantly, improving public policy, public services, and perhaps not so much noticed, but actually the quality of the research base and the research universities as a magnet for attracting into the UK the inward investment of globally mobile R&D investment, very, very important. So a multidimensional approach to convincing, let's say, the Treasury and others of the vital importance of investment. part of that scenario, and quite a bit of what I will say will be linked to the economy, linked to business and industry, but just perhaps to repeat at the beginning, this is all embracing across disciplines, across cultural, creative, and other capital inputs. But in terms of working with business, which has been a preoccupation of government and of policy for some time, how do we extract maximum leverage, impact, benefit from that excellent research base and the investment that's gone into it? Figures that show that really there has been a tremendous increase in that activity and the leverage that's been obtained on the back of public funding in total, in terms of contract research with universities, with industry, collaborative research, consultancy, and so on and so forth, we can tell a very good story of the wider leverage and impacts of that public investment. In terms of not just, of course, the impact on business and industry, but the science and research is brought to bear on the big social, national, international challenges that we face. And so over the years, we've evolved these cross-council programs in the research councils, working with other government departments, working with businesses to address the big challenges. Lifelong health and well-being, food security, energy, digital economy, living with environmental change. These are huge, complicated programs. In total, something like 15% of the Research Council spend goes into this space, levering very large amounts of other money from other government departments and from business. And so in addition to the economic impact, there is the response to national and international challenges. And so a very multifaceted picture of the way that this system delivers impact to the economy and society. And these kind of issues and the evidence base behind it, I have to say, was vitally important in getting the outcome that we got for science and research funding. So there are many elements to assessing, communicating, telling the good stories, the narrative of impact. We will, in the redesign of the RAE into the REF, we will painfully grope our way towards the right kind of metrics and balance that will, in addition to excellence, recognise past impact. In present terms, we've maintained the level of funding on the HIFE element of university funding to support universities' capacity to work with business and outside the university sector. And in the future, not, as many have parodied the situation, asking people to predict the outcomes of their research, but simply asking them to consider potential impacts so that we can put in place support mechanisms and encouragement mechanisms to realise future potential as and when that's appropriate. And in addition to the research councils, we have in recent years the addition to the landscape, the Technology Strategy Board, more focused on the technology readiness levels from perhaps 3 to 6 or 7, whereas the research councils and the universities will be mainly focusing on 1, 2, 3. So that as background to the debates, the arguments that we used in terms of getting the resources for the next spending review period. Part of that was a wide-ranging consultation with a number of national bodies who could be relied upon to take a broad, generous, generalist view rather than arguing for their little particular corners of the universe. And you will know who you are, you will know what you said, and you will have a view as to whether we took any notice. I think we did, and that most of what we ended up with doing was very much in line precisely with that consultation. And over and above everything else, and these, of course, are things that require, at the end of the day, ministerial sign-up and a clear sense that this is the right direction. So I'll just pause on these individually for a moment. At the heart of it, funding must go on excellence. Public funding is in short supply, so wherever possible you want to use public funding to lever in that excellent space other forms of funding. And so in the QR stream to HEFCE, there was protection for that, those funding streams that match and incentivise working with medical charities and working with business. A concern that if there were hard times, we shouldn't switch off the tap for the young and the new researchers and the next generation of researchers. You can't look at the research landscape as a sort of navel-gazing activity. It's there for many things. I've talked a bit about the economy, but we also have to look to ensure that we have the national capability to support other departments across government, inputs into health, inputs into the environment, inputs into the energy and climate landscape. And this has to be underpinned in many areas by access to large-scale research infrastructure. And we can debate how much of that we build and run ourselves, how much we do in the international domain. Strategic national challenges, you know, volcanic ash, whatever, we need to be able to respond to that, foot and mouth diseases. And a growing sense, and certainly sign up from our current ministers, that there are things about critical mass and concentration and geographic concentrations that can be shown in an evidenced way to attract and to magnify and to lever public inputs. And so the idea of research clusters of various kinds as important, both in terms of research excellence and in terms of economic growth, and the ability, because science and research takes a long time, to have some kind of stability of funding, which might be shorthand for ring-fence budgets over four-year periods, and to make sure we don't overtrade, and that as part of the deal, part of the financial structure of underpinning, that we have sustainability through some version of full economic costing. So those kind of principles were in place. And the key themes, concentration, I won't sort of dwell on this, it was implicit in what I just said. Concentrate on proven excellence. We need to compete globally, so look at issues of critical mass, capability to do that, and have some ways of prioritising and supporting those clusters of excellence. We already do that, of course. Those two figures, which all you have to see in them is that they are clustered up to the left, shows the degree of concentration both in both parts of the dual support system, the QR funding in England to the universities down the bottom, and the Research Council income at the top, where you'll see that as we get up to the 80, 85, 90% of funding, it's really going, it's being concentrated on something like 30 to 40 institutions. But of course, we don't do those assessments and rewards at an institutional level. We do it to individuals, groups, departments, units of assessment. But when you aggregate it up, it comes out at that kind of concentration level across institutions. We never have enough money. Some people may think we've got slightly less money than we would like at the moment. And so some principles of leveraging as much external funding on the back of public funding as possible. And if there's going to be a shortage of capital money and we can't have as many pieces of kit as before, that's a wonderful incentive. Let's turn it into an opportunity after several decades of encouraging too much naked competition, perhaps, among institutions, to actually turn it into an incentive for collaboration. So collaboration among the research councils, collaboration among the universities to make the most of more limited funds. So I think there's an interesting issue to debate. Competition is a wonderful dynamic and I think has served us extremely well in upping the quality of the research base. Perhaps the time has come to change the balance a bit more towards collaboration, critical mass. This is a very boring slide, but of course part of the, if you're in government, making the most of public money, you want to know that it's been used efficiently and you will want to put at every opportunity drivers, incentives, thumbscrews to drive efficiency through the system. And so part of the deal with the Treasury is the identification of ways of pushing in efficiency savings through the system, but with the deal that it's within a ring fence and is therefore recycled into research. So the more we can find clever and more efficient ways of processing and doing, the more money there is to spend on the research itself. The actual outcome of the review, I think everybody will know this, there was cash protection across the period of the spending review, and it was ring-fenced. And for the first time, inside that ring fence was the complete funding both of the English QR stream and the Research Council stream. In the past, that was true of the Research Council stream, but not of QR. The less good news, across government, there's big cuts in capital. That's not good news, but actually, there was a lot of capital in the last spending review, which enabled us to catch up and do remedial action on falling behind that many years ago. And so maybe that's not as terrible. On the other hand, we don't want to go forward too many years at this kind of level, else we'll get back in that situation once again. We have, through the research councils, collectively, they do identify the roadmap for major facilities and expend and prioritise them. We then get those priorities agreed by ministers, and as the capital becomes available, you will find announcements of new initiatives in that area. Just to put it in perspective, across the whole of government funding, and this is not in any way to gloat at the poor bastards down the left-hand side there, but across government, there were big variations in the cuts within in departments. And if you isolate, of course, science and research isn't a department, but if you isolate where that stood in the scheme of things, that was perhaps not so bad. And I think ministers have wanted to go out of their way to make clear that, of course, in discussing with the Treasury, of course, in positioning yourself as a department for growth, of course, the interests of the DEFRAs and the DECs and the MODs and so on will sort of drive to the fore the challenges and the applications of science and research. But ministers have wanted to go out of their way to emphasise there is not some policy shift and into a purely kind of utilitarian or applied, whatever that means, research space, but that fundamental research and fundamental curiosity on the part of outstanding researchers remains hugely part of the landscape. I did have a couple of slides which had every single figure in the allocation, and some spoil sport at the Foundation for Science and Technology said they were not readable. And they weren't meant to be, of course. But so my big joke's been taken away from me, and all I can do is refer you to the document and the website where you can read every single figure. But just to see where we've come from on the left and where we're going to in cash terms across the seven research councils, that's our version of it could have been a lot worse, couldn't it? And within that, there were some things we have to deal with at a very strategic level. We have suffered in recent years in terms of exchange rates. We've got massive international subscriptions and international activity in science and research, and those have been very big hits. We also were instructed by government, by the Treasury, to protect the MRC in a way which enabled it to maintain its expenditure, that's its total expenditure, through the allocation and through its intellectual property and other income in real terms. Because the Department of Health, if you remember, was signaled, separated out by government as protected in the overall spending review. And looking, we have had arguments about STFC over the years, and we wanted to take the opportunity perhaps to remove some of those arguments and go forward on a different basis. So I'll show you in a second some specifics that we've done in the STFC space. When you take all that out, the total cash going into the research councils was just over 97% of the current baseline. In MRC, resource expenditure was maintained in real terms, and the Department of Health, in its infinite generosity and wisdom, decided, since it had done so well in the spending settlement, out of the blue, they came around with a check and said, why don't we give you the capital funding over the spending review for the UK Centre for Medical Research and Innovation? I thought about it for a second and a half, and the check came through. So we have got a big capital injection. This offsets, to some extent, the cut in capital overall. Back to STFC, debates over recent years. STFC, a very difficult research council in the sense that it's doing many things. It's running its own core program, its grants, its PhD studentships, but it's also the custodian of the facilities that underpin the work of all the research councils and more broadly. And it's where a lot of the international subscriptions sit, so it gets hit by the exchange rate. So what we decided to do was try and separate off those two things and give a cash settlement across the facilities and across the international subscriptions, which would remove those kind of pressures and then subject STFC to much the same kind of pressures, 97% over the period for its own grant line. It will be too much to hope for that the letters STFC will never again appear in Research Fortnight, but that's the best shot we have. So in Hefke, the letter that's gone to the funding council gives them a sense of direction of focusing the QR funding on internationally excellent research, protecting the leverage effects. HIFE will give greater incentives to work with business, and they're under instruction to introduce the REF. The academies, their settlement, we had very civilized discussions on things we think they could do which would react to some government interests. For example, quantitative social sciences and some language and other deficits. In terms of space, we're spinning out space activity into an executive agency, the UK Space Agency, on April the 1st, and there are government wishes to maintain both the science and the industrial interaction with that science. Space is one of the fastest growing sectors. It has Chinese levels of growth in recent years, and the government wanted that to be recognised, so there was a more protected settlement for space. TSB, fundamental part of the landscape, working with the research councils. The core budget is not yet announced, but you will have seen that there is an additional £200 million in the pot to establish a network of technology and innovation centres, and the prospectus for those has been issued. One is going to be accelerated in advanced manufacturing. The closing date for applications was yesterday or the day before. And so we'll be moving on, I hope, ahead of the budget to announce the first of those. I've noticed that few of these people are in the audience. I just wanted to say there was a letter which warmed the cockles of ministers' hearts following the settlement. And if anybody who signed that letter gets negative later in the evening, we know where you live.
Professor Malcolm Brown.